Mackenzie.
Lamar.
Oscar Watch Watch 2025. Dun, 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 dun. How you doing on your Oscar watch through of trying to watch all 50 of these fucking movies? And then my second question is, any films that you've watched in the last couple of weeks that we're not covering this month but are Oscar nominated and you highly recommend?
Okay, so I'm okay. I'm only lightly cracking. Like, I haven't fully cracked yet, so we're doing great. Quick recap, I started having seen 12. I have now seen 21. Okay. So
you've been working.
Steadily progressing. I am seeing one after we finish up today, and I am seeing another one tomorrow, and then I will be in Vegas for work, so I will not be watching movies for several days, and then I got to come back, and I got to cram. And as you know, my birthday is coming up, so... I don't know. We'll figure that out.
I was going to say it's worth noting that we're recording this in early February. So you're not as behind as it might sound to the listeners when they hear this in a couple weeks, but.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty well ahead. If I can see, there's several things, like the things that I haven't seen yet are all streamable. So there are things that I'm like not as worried about getting in. What I'm trying to cram in right now are the ones that are like about to leave theaters. So I saw Nickel Boys, for example, which was like on its last run, Sing Sing on its last run. Sing Sing is one that we're not going to cover that I absolutely wholeheartedly recommend. I think it's incredible. I actually might share a reel on the pod page of like, I did an immediate reaction recording because I was just so moved by it. I thought it was so good.
That was what I was going to suggest, because I remember we had like one slot left to fill and you said, can you send me a few suggestions? I was going to send it, but it wasn't playing anywhere for me. And I also couldn't find anywhere to rent it. So I was like, well, I'm not going to be able to watch it. So
so I eked it out last week because AFS did a rerun of it. So AFS Cinema is local to us. And so I literally left work early one day to go see it. I mean, not super early, but earlier than I normally do. Y'all usually work till like 6 or 7. So I left early and went and saw it. It was really good. I really recommend it. We're also not going to cover The Brutalist, which is a Best Picture nom as well.
That's a favorite, right? Isn't that the one that a lot of people think is going to win?
It's very well done. I think it's going to be one of the favorites. Yes, it's very long. So I think it's hard for a lot of people to see it because it's so long that it has an intermission in the theater.
Really?
And it's funny. Yeah. And it's funny. Skylar was like, it should win an Oscar just for giving us an intermission. Like, this is my favorite thing. And it was actually really nice because you got up, you had 15 minutes to go stretch, go to the bathroom, do all the things.
What's the actual runtime?
It's three. Actually, you know what? Because my spreadsheet is magical. 215 minutes is what it is.
That's 3 hours and 35 minutes.
Yeah. So
I remember I saw The Irishman in theaters and that was a fucking mistake. That did not have an intermission.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I think at a certain point you just need to give it an intermission. That worked really well. I think what's interesting about this is a post Holocaust story. So a lot of people are kind of like lumping it into Holocaust World War II movies. I think it's very different than that though. It takes a different take. I think it's more about how you adjust to a new world and a new life after something so traumatic and groundbreaking has happened. And you are in some ways in a new society seen still as a bit other. And so I think it's a very different angle on it. And so for that reason, I think it's really interesting for sure. And then there's definitely some short films I would recommend. I may post those on the pod because I think they're very consumable. There's been some really interesting ones. There was a really odd one called I'm Not a Robot that I might share out with y'all. It was very unique, very different. But yeah, there's lots of good stuff. But I think my running theme is it's all pretty long. Like the feature films are all pretty
well. I was gonna throw out there because I'm not taking you up on this challenge of watching 50 movies this month, but we got around to watching A Real Pain, and that one was 90 minutes, I think, or like an hour 25. And that packed a lot of emotional punch for being so quick. And I think it's on Hulu now if anybody wants to check that out.
I think you can do that. There's not that many, though. There's like that, and A Porcelain War is a bit shorter, but a lot of them are very, very long. Sing Sing wasn't that long, I will say. But you have many that are like over the 2-hour mark. The one I saw Saturday, for example, Seed of a Sacred Fig, which is incredible. And fun fact, filmed entirely in secret because it was filmed in Iran, where it was, you know, the actually Holy the shit. Director was later convicted of like propaganda against the system. So it's really an intensely shot film, and it's so well done, but it's very long. It was 2 hours and 47 minutes. And so it's some of these are like, they take work to watch. I think that's the yep. thing I would say is like, I don't know, first world problems. I'm very tired. I'm very like, this is a lot to consume. But the films are really interesting. And I love short films for that reason. If you need a breather, like pop in a short film, and there's some good ones. There's some good
ones. I like when the Draft House does the screenings for all the shorts, where they'll just, you get to go see all the animated ones in a row, and it ends up taking you 2 hours, but you get six little stories or whatever. It's cool.
Yeah, I sometimes do that. So I'm so hardcore about the time that I need to watch these movies that I have figured out the order of the shorts as they are screened inside the short showing. And I will go watch that one and like leave at the time where I'm like, I've already seen these. Because there's a bunch that you can stream, but then there's usually one or two that you can't track down in time, and you've got to go see that short showing. And I'm like, I'm not going to rewatch all of them. I've already seen them. It's like, for example, there's only three shorts I haven't tracked down right now. So I will be going into those respective theaters and leaving when I have seen all the ones that I need to see.
You've got it down to a science. So that's cool. All right.
It is a science.
Well, thank you for the update on Oscar Watch 2025. Dun, dun, dun.
I love your like built-in sound effect.
I need to come up with a consistent theme song. I think it changed from the beginning to the end of the segment.
But it's an annual thing now, you know? We got to do it. Got to invest. Welcome back to We Drink and We Watch Things. I'm Mackenzie.
I'm Lamar.
And we are continuing Oscars month. I'm fine. I'm not tired at all. This one's about Flow. This is best animated feature nom, best international feature nom, actually, from Latvia. So this is an interesting one. It's a fun
another
one.
Quick one, too. I liked how short this one was. Just a quick little Friday night watch for us. Yeah, enjoyable.
Yeah, it's interesting that it feels quick because there's no dialogue. So we'll get into all that.
I think we teased that, last week when I said it is very different from a lot of contemporary animated films. It does a lot of cool things.
It does. It does. And it already won it's won several awards, but it already won the Golden Globe, if you didn't already know, for Best Animated Film. So, and I think it's only, I think it's only the third animated film ever to get nominated for Best International Film as well. So not common that's like what's submitted, you know, in that category. So that's kind of a fun little
difference. Were the other two the other Garfield movies?
Yes. All that spaghetti, you know, that gets them every time.
It was four in Garfield. There was the one where you had a kitty and parrot. What the fuck was that movie called?
I don't actually watch the Garfield movies. Like, I was old school and I read the comics. Like, I read the actual comics.
Oh, you're like a Garfield stan over here. Like.
Y'all, okay, I read, as we've established. No, I'm just kidding. Well, so we're going to get into it. All the interesting things that this one does that is so different, like for an animated film. But what are we drinking?
So we are drinking a delicious concoction with a lot going on in it today, as always, created by at Craft World. This is 2 ounces of spiced rum, 0.75 ounces of lime juice, 0.75 ounces of hot honey simple syrup. You can make that yourself. It's basically just water, honey, and throw some pepper flakes in there. I actually used a little bit of sriracha just because I had it sitting around. So I was like, let me throw a little extra chicken
feeling
here.
Fancy.
Yeah. And then 1 ounce, which seemed like a lot for Skylar's. I think he's taking care of me with the sugar on this one.
I was going to say, he's making them sweeter for you for sure.
So I was surprised by the 1 full ounce of strawberry puree. But yeah, you just shake that up, strain it over a rock, and we're calling this the Force of Nature. Right?
Yeah.
I'll put a mark here. I think it's called the Force of Nature.
It is. You did it. You did it. Cool. So cheers.
Cheers.
It is very sweet. Okay, you can't really see it on camera, y'all, but I'll try to post a picture. But so you put it on a big rock is the other tip, is put it on a big rock. And this is a nature-based film, if you couldn't tell. A lot of animals. So my big rock is a coiled snake.
Where do you get these ice cube molds? That's incredible.
I can't, I can't divulge my secrets. Just kidding. I'll send you the link. I find the weirdest ice molds. I don't know. It's like, it's my favorite part. I'm like, I got to pick. I almost put like a regular cube in there and I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I have one that is perfect for this. So yeah, it's a little, I got a little snake in my drink. So it's fun.
Cool. Yeah, it's tasty. I think the sriracha might have been a mistake, and that's on me, but I'm getting like the sweet up front and then all the spicy on the back end. I feel like it should be
flip-flop. I was going to say, that does feel like a sriracha thing. Like it would get spicy on the back end.
Yeah.
We had the like actual Mike's Hot Honey. So he made nice. Like a simple out of that. And it's really good. If you haven't had a Mike's Hot Honey, it's delicious, but he did add the simple to it. So yeah, it was really good. I like it. It's definitely a little bit, I think your sriracha definitely gives you a different feeling. Cause for me, it's mostly very sweet.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really good. All right, homies, we're talking about Flow 2024. We're going to give you some quick spoiler-free nuggets, and then we'll get into it. This is 7.9 out of 10 on IMDb, 97% from critics, which is like maybe one of the best that we've had, and 99% from audiences. So like universal acclaim for sure. Very well done.
I think this will end up being... For a specific age group, I feel like I hope that there are lots of kids out there actually watching this one, because like we said, no dialogue. It's a fairly simple plot. I think there are some probably complex plot points later in the film that we'll get to where it's like, well, what does this mean? But for the most part, this is just an incredible children's movie. I think adults will still enjoy it, but you need to watch this from the perspective of a child, because I was talking to folks last night about it. I was like, this is what, you remember Milo and Otis?
Yes, I
this
do.
Is what Milo and Otis should have been, and you don't feel bad because there's no fucking animal cruelty in this, but it's like animal adventure, feels like real animals, and it's just adorable and heartbreaking but great. So highly recommend.
Okay, first of all, that is such a throwback. Like I don't even remember the last time I heard Milo and Otis. And it's fun fact, I used to like name all my inanimate objects, don't judge me. There's a lot of Milos and Otises around my house, so anyway. I love that. But funny, I will actually take like a slightly different take. I think it's incredible. I agree with everything you said about being really interesting. I think it's really incredible. I think it could potentially have a very different message for adults. I think if you watch it as an adult, it can have a very different message, and you can read it a number of ways. I think you read it like allegorically. You can read it as like a commentary on humanity, even though there are, you know, very few allusions to that throughout because we are focusing on animals. But yeah, I think there's a number of ways to watch this is what I would say. And they're all really interesting. So yeah,
it turns out when there's no dialogue in your movie, people can interpret.
You can
things.
Just do so just many things.
Where does your mind take you?
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. All right. So some quick facts. Again, these are Latvian filmmakers. So I apologize for the second week in a row for butchering pronunciations. I did look them up. We're going to see if it holds up at all. The director, cinematographer, composer, editor, and producer of this film is Gyöngyös Zsivaldoris. And I hope I did. I practiced so hard. Anyway, he's done a bunch of stuff, all animated to date. Away is what he's probably most well known for that some people have seen. That is a feature length animated film as well that we'll get into kind of how he's done these films, but he did do that one a little bit differently, but he is very adept at this. He also did Oasis and Followers and the short film Aqua, which actually served as like the framework a bit of this one. It's a similar shorter story around a cat getting over its fear of the ocean. So slightly different, but interesting. Like we said, he wrote it as well. So wrote the concept, the story, and then had a couple other people who also were contributing writers, Matisse Kaza and Ron Diens. Those, both of them haven't done a lot that most people would know. It's like Latvian work. One is Neon Spring. The other one was like mostly shorts. And another one I thought was funny that they did was Acoustic Kitty. And I was like, there's a theme here. We're just doing cat movies is what I've learned.
I was going to say, when I looked at this and I saw there were three writers credit, I went, what did they write exactly? I imagine the script was like 3 pages long of just the animals get on a boat. This happens. This, not to devalue what they're doing, but it's like no dialogue. So it's just kind of like describing all the things that are going to happen on. So I don't imagine the script was very long.
I was going to say, I think it was just a very descriptive heavy screenplay. You know, it was very
a lot of
like
storyboarding.
There is, there is a lot of storyboarding. There is a lot, I mean, despite what it sounds like, there is a lot happening. So, yeah. I think that's why they just must have contributed to the story. So, quick plot summary. Oh, let me clarify. There's no cast. We're skipping right over that. There's no cast here. And
I wrote down the cast. I wrote, we have a cat with trust issues, an indifferent capybara, a hoarding lemur, an honorable bird, and then, how should I put this? A very simple dog.
Aw, he's a cutie patootie. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good summary. We've got some good characters here. We just don't have actors that are playing them, is what we will say. But yeah, quick plot summary. Cat is a solitary animal, but as its home is devastated by a great flood, he finds refuge on a boat populated by various species and will have to team up with them despite their differences. So I think that's really simple, to the point summary, that it's accurate, but it's a lot more happens than that. You know, like so much happens.
I have the thought, I think about 15 or 20 minutes in, of, I originally was skeptical and I was having this thought of, I kind of wish this was a short film because I didn't think it could sustain itself for an hour and a half of this being the storyline. And it proved me completely wrong because it develops and you see all these different dynamics between all the characters in it. I also love that they act like animals, which I think was intentional on the part of the director.
Yeah.
They didn't want to do, you know, the traditional Disney Pixar, not to critique those, but where they're like, the animals are basically humans. We're going to have
them personifying animals.
These are animals that are behaving for the most part like animals. It's a silly situation. It's over the top, but you can buy that this is how a dog and a cat and a bird and a capybara would get along if they were on a boat. It feels, you know, as natural as any other, I guess, animated picture with animals.
I think the only difference being that it feels like they are a touch more sentient even than the average animal. But it, again, to your point, all makes sense. It all makes sense. And it feels realistic that under these circumstances that this could happen. So
yeah, they took it from like a one, like from a 1 to 10 scale, they take them to like a 3 of how sentient and like not human they are, but giving them like these distinct personalities and quirks and whatnot. But they don't do what most animators do and take them all the way up to a 10 where they're basically just people.
Which, if anybody's ever had a fur baby, you know they got their own personalities, so it totally checks out. You're like, these, like you said, the hoarding lemur, like I thought that was one of the funnier ones. Like they're just, they have their own little, you know, facets, their personality, and I think it's cool how it comes through. So it's hard to be spoiler-free with this one is what I would say, because it's really unique. But I will say a couple quick production things. This, again, is a Latvian film. It had a budget of 3.5 million euros, which is like a little over $3.6 million.
Can you put that in perspective real quick of $3 million budget? So guys, for the record, Moana 2, $150 million budget. Inside Out 2, $200 million budget. Now you can say that a lot of that is probably cast, right? Like you're having to pay stars to do voice acting, which you don't have in this. But the fact that this was a $3 million budget and is now winning all these awards and nominated is just so fucking impressive.
It is impressive. And I think it comes to a couple of things. One, yeah, you don't have cast to deal with. Two, this one guy did like 40% of the work. And three, this is done. This animation is completed using a free open source software called Blender. And this is a open source 3D computer generated software. It can run on like basically any machine that you have. Essentially, it does visual effects, it does art, just 3D models, it does all these things. I was looking into it today because I was real curious about it. I'm going to make a movie, obviously. That's what I, you know, my next project, because I'm not busy. But the first movie that he did, that he animated, the feature film that he animated away, was done on Maya, which is a similar type of concept. So he's adept at using these free tools and making this really incredible creation. So I think that's, you know, this is a guy really dedicated to his craft, but using seemingly simple methods and incorporating a team that has, you know, a lot to bring to the table, of course, but like very specific things that you don't have to tap into really complicated graphics and things like a Disney does.
I'll be honest, the first like 10 to 15 minutes or so, the animation was frightening me a little bit. I was getting, as somebody who grew up playing video games in like the aughts, of just, it had that same kind of like,
It's something about, it's not that they're boxy. The animals' faces were freaking me out a little bit at the beginning, but then like the layering of the backgrounds and stuff, it just felt very like aughts. And it wasn't until after that I found out what you just told us about, like the way it was animated, which props to them for doing that. I will say I got used to it after like 20 minutes, but it did take a little bit of like getting used to the style of animation. And then once it gets to like, once they're on the water and they're doing these beautiful overhead shots and underwater shots and you're seeing the sky and the ocean and all these things, that's when I think the animation really thrives. But the first 15 minutes, I was a little underwhelmed, I guess.
It's funny you say that because same thing. I just have a slightly different take. I do think it is an atypical form of animation. So it's definitely not what you're expecting to see when you go like, hey, I'm going to watch an animated film. And even different than, say, like a stop motion animation, right? Like that you still have certain expectations. It's a very different style of animation, but you still have certain expectations that most kind of adhere to. And this one is very different, I think, but I really enjoyed the aesthetic and the difference that he had in his animation. It was unique enough and compelling enough and in many ways realistic enough to me as far as like looking like the environment that I thought it was really engaging kind of from the start. But it is, and I'll have to send this to you, Lamar, after this, but I saw also, this was a while ago now when it first came out, but I saw a side-by-side video comparison of the first draft, so to speak, of the animation. And then when he's like finished all the layers to it. And that was really interesting and compelling as well of like, you just don't think of animation that way. I think I certainly don't, not being an artist, not being an animator, not understanding this process at all. You just don't think about, especially a computer generated animation, right, as having layers to it, you know? And it does. It was wild to see how they produce this. I mean, like all I'm saying is don't underestimate an animated product on a free piece of software. Like the amount of work and layers and effort and art that goes into it is kind of mind-boggling, to be honest. And it was 5.5 years also, speaking of the amount of work. Jeez. It was a 5.5 year production time, which is, I think, again, speaks to like one guy working on this in his free time, right? Like it's going to take you a while. But yeah, it's blown audiences away, I think, in general. So
hope it opens up more opportunities for him going forward, like putting all that time into this, like a passion project kind of thing.
Yeah, I hope so as well. They had a number of pieces of funding. I mean, he did some of it through Latvia, but it also, some of the work was done, I wanted to say it was in Belgium and France. And so there's multiple people who contributed to the financing here. And obviously, again, with the success that it's seeing, hopefully more to come and we can see more from him. Yeah. But yeah, so everything else, I think if we get into it, it's going to be pretty spoilery. So I think it's about that time, kids, turn around, don't drown. Funny and ironic for this one. It's spoiler time.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think I cut you off earlier, but you were saying it was a $3 million budget and it's pulled in what, like 14 so far.
Oh yeah. 14.4 million. Mm-hmm.
Not a bad return. So,
not a bad return, especially for, again, a low budget animation film that it does not have a Disney level release too. Like, right, let's keep that in mind. It has a limited showing. I don't know. I don't remember when it first started showing, but it was very shortly before Oscars eligibility. So think like end of 2024. I want to say it was like November, early December. It wasn't in theaters long. And I think a lot of that, again, was part of the eligibility piece. And so I'm not surprised it's not crazy high, but that's pretty impressive for, I think, the amount of marketing and everything that goes into this particular film.
Yeah.
So really quick, we'll talk through kind of like the high level story that is happening here. And you kind of, I think, go right into it. And I don't know about you, but the thing that got me from kind of the get was I was like anxious. You know, you just knew something was kind of like, there's a threat of some kind, and it's very subtle. It is a little bit of a slow build at first because you can't quite tell. So there's this cat, this dark colored cat. I thought black. They say it's dark gray. This small cat that's like wandering through the forest, and these dogs are like running nearby, and you immediately, of course, dogs and cats, right, guys? Like you're freaking out. Like these dogs are going to get this cat. And you quickly kind of learn that there's a different threat coming. It's not so much the dogs, you know, it's there is this flood, there is this rising water level, and it's so heart-wrenching to watch these animals and this cat especially, who's your main point of view, trying to just get to safety. And I was like, in the first 10 minutes, I was like, I don't know if I can get through this. Like, I am so stressed.
I was
worried.
On edge throughout this of just, I don't want to see, I know it's animation, but I'm like, it's pulling at my heartstrings. And I'm like, I don't want to see anything bad happen to any of these animals. And yeah, like you said, it ratchets right up into it. I kind of like that we just kick straight off, the water starts rising, and we see these different dynamics sort of start to come out between the cat and, I'm just going to call him the dog. He's the main dog.
And they refer to him as a retriever, just so you
okay.
know. Like, so the cast, they do have names, and he's retriever, and the cat is cat, and yeah, so on and so forth.
Okay. So that initial dynamic between them, where he's a dumb dog and he just wants to be friends with everybody because that's what dogs do, but his friends are fucking assholes. Can I just point that out from the get-go? The rest of the dogs in his group, yeah. They are morons.
They're stirring the pot. They're there to fuck around. It's like when you're in a group of bros, you know, and there's a bunch of asshole bros, and then there's one like friendly, nice bro that's like apologizing for his friends. That's the retriever here for sure. And yeah, he just wants to be friends with everybody. He's just very like, why we gotta be mean? You know, he's very sweet and simple, and he just wants everybody to be friends. And I loved him immediately, because obviously.
I have a guess here, but of all the animal characters in this, which one are you?
Oh gosh, that's a very different question. I thought you were going to say which one is your favorite, and I was like, well,
no, which one do you relate
always.
To? I know which one you're going to say, but I'm curious.
Which one do I relate to? Actually haven't thought about it that way at all.
Which one is Mackenzie?
I mean, probably the bird who's like,
really
trying to steer everything. I don't know. That's just the first thing that popped into my head, because he's like, hey, I got this. Let me handle it. You know, like, let me steer us and get us to safety.
Goal oriented, driven, competitive. I could see that. Okay.
I feel like he was kind of like, hey, I know what to do here. If if you mess it up, we're not going to make it. You know, I feel like he was kind of a little bit like that. But honestly, I don't know. Which one did you think?
I thought you would go cat, honestly. I feel like you're a cat in human forms at times, but
I mean, it's funny you say that, because I don't feel like I relate to cats very much. So that's probably like my mental block there. But yeah, I do have probably a lot in common with cats. I especially like this cat. Like, he's very sweet, but also like smart, you know. You see him, unlike the dog, he's very much a foil to the dog, right? And so he's or she, you don't really tell. I think it's just dark colored. So I don't know. I guess I went with he, but it's just like, he goes after, you know, safety. He's cautious. He's assessing of situations. You know, it's like he doesn't just jump on the first, you know, option, right? He's like, let me evade and get somewhere that is maybe the most, that makes the most sense. But he does kind of like panic a few times. And I guess I just don't really identify with that more than anything. That's Who do you fair. Relate to?
I mean, the lemur seems to be the obvious choice, right? If we're in the name.
And I was like, are we going to go for the low-hanging fruit of the lemur? Do you hoard a lot of things?
I'm very protective of my belongings. I had two younger siblings that would always like borrow my stuff, and then it would turn out broken. So I've always been super protective.
So you're like, boy, do I get that, the mirror. Yeah. You were like, motherfucker. Yeah,
of course they came in and they broke it, assholes.
Of course they did.
Yeah. I would probably say the lemur. I think everybody wants to be the capybara, but no one's that chill. That dude is so cool.
Nobody is that chill. Yeah. I would never pretend to be the capybara. Is the capybara the cutest, most adorable? Maybe. Definitely a contender. Very cute. Very adorable. His voice was like, so they did all, I think important to note, all the animal sounds are real animal sounds. And the capybara sounds are real animal sounds as well. But fun fact, the production sent a guy to tickle a capybara, which is the only time that
That's
they
the
make
best
sounds,
job.
Yeah. Which is the best fucking job in the world, right? I was like, how did I not get this job? I want this job. And so they were like, well, they're very quiet. Generally speaking, capybaras are pretty quiet, which is true. I weirdly am obsessed with capybaras. So I was like, yeah, checks out. So they tickle them, and they thought it was like adorable that they get tickled, but his voice was like so shrill It was kind of obnoxious that they were like, it wasn't the right sound or tone for the movie. So instead they used a baby camel.
Do you think that the like the casting crew had to break the news to that capybara that he didn't get the job? Or do you think his agent told him like, hey, man,
I think they just fit. Protected him. I think they made him feel like that's how you sound. You know, don't worry, honey. You sound great. You know what I mean? I don't think he knows. I think we just protect him from that information for sure. Yeah. So, I mean, all that to say, these, they definitely, like, speaking to that, they all have these very different personalities, you know? Mm-hmm. They very much come across as very different creatures. Capybara, again, is, like, so chill. Like, unrealistically chill. Just does not give a fuck. Which is, I mean, true for capybaras. They're very, like, they're unfazed. They do not care.
Yeah, and, like, every situation that he just, like, decides to just slump over and fall asleep, that's, I wish I could be that cool.
I know. I wish I could fall asleep that easily and just be like, oh, this is super stressful. I'm going to just go to sleep. I'm going to just go to sleep right now. That sounds like the move. But I do like, I mean, they say like they get these very different creatures together who have to work together to survive this thing. And I think the thing that we kind of breeze past is that this feels very tense from the top because the water levels are rising in a way that this is not a landscape that we know, right? Like we are not seeing any landmarks that are human based really at all. I mean, there's evidence of humans. There's a home that this cat had been in there. There's some statues, there's ruins and things like that, but it feels like a post human society, right? Mm-hmm. Like the humans aren't around anymore. So you don't have the same points of reference, but you get the impression that some of these statues are incredibly tall, like impressively crazy tall. And the one that the cat escapes onto is very tall, right? And it's flooding to that level. And I think that's where you feel the real terror here of this is coming. There's no real safe space for anybody or anything. And then they have to all get onto this one boat. And it's like, there's limited space. There's limited safe places in the world, period.
It feels less like a flood that we would consider a flood in, like in modern day, in real life, but more like an apocalypse. I wrote down at the beginning, I swear to God, if this ends on Noah's Ark or some shit, because that's what it looked. It was like the whole world is flooding. Everything at some point is almost underwater. Yeah. So it feels like post-apocalyptic. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I think like he goes and survives by jumping on the boat that I think the capybara was already on. Right. And so he joins that, which again is already a risk, right? Like this is not your species. This is not a creature that you interact with and, you know, like doesn't know how chill it is yet. Right. So everything is like that was a necessary decision at this point. You had to get on the boat. And then from there, it's just one more decision after another of, do we let this other creature, do we save them or do we let them on here and do we kind of rally? And I think there's this, you know, every single one of those decisions throughout the film feels just as stressful. You're like, you know, should we get this lemur? Should we get this whatever else? You know, everything's kind of, is this a threat? You know,
you mentioned earlier sort of the different ways you can interpret this and I think one thing that I don't even think it's interpretable. I think this is very intentional on the part of the director, but it feels like this, the cat of all the animals in this has kind of the most trust issues. We called that out at the top of what's a solo animal and cats are independent creatures, right? So that it's sort of this process of him having to learn how to trust all these different species and work together. And occasionally that trust gets broken. I just love the different dynamics. The things the bird does to save the cat, it's just incredible.
I love this bird, this secretary bird. And they, I, like I said a minute ago, he feels like he, and I think it's by virtue of his perspective, which I think is cool, right? They're trying to show that this bird is able to better assess everything. Right. They just have a different view. They're so high up. They can see, you know, they hunt fish that are in the water. Right. So they clearly have the capability to see through the water. They can see the treetops, the statues, the levels of the flood. What is high ground or safe ground and where is grass and where is water? Blah, blah, blah. They just have a better perspective. And so I think it's interesting that there's this innate empathy between this bird who has this point of view, this in theory, the most comprehensive point of view, and these land animals, for lack of a better term, all of them, just to like, they don't have the same safety and ability to escape that we as birds do. Like, and they are not threats to us. And that was such an interesting scene with all those birds coming for these other animals. And the one in particular seems to be like kind of the head of everything. And actually, I think it's a he. I think it's implied that that's like a patriarchal dude. And this is like the matriarchal. So actually she is trying to save this community, is kind of how I read it at the time, at least. And she steps in front of the cat and tries to save, like, don't go, what is this cat doing to you? He's just trying to survive, right? And this group of birds is not, other than her, other than this one, is not seeing it from their point of view at all. From the point of view of, these animals aren't really coming for you. They're just trying to survive.
Yeah, I think of all the moments in the, and it is very emotional, so it is a valuable moment, but I think of all the moments in the film where we talk about their behaving, how animals behave, the one that stands out is like, oh, that's kind of out there, is when the bird intentionally breaks the other bird's wings so that it can't, like, that feels like
that one,
a mob hit or some shit. So not to say that it takes away from the film, but I'll call that out since I gave it a compliment at the top. If that feels story driven, it's necessary to get the bird as part of the team, because now she can't fly. So, but yeah, I
agree with that. I think that's true. I think it's one of the things that sets that bird apart. But also, I would say she has already at this point, I think, saved him from the water once, which also feels like something where you're like, would she do that? Because he goes underwater and he starts to kind of sink a little bit and he's overwhelmed. She saves him and I think that's great, and it's very heartwarming and you're like, it's like a breath of relief. But to your point, the wing thing and that thing, does that feel like something in nature would happen? Probably not. You know?
And it's, what's interesting about what you just said is that throughout this, I think we as humans watch this and we assume it's going to become like every man for themselves. And like, the birds don't really care because they can survive. They'll fly, whatever. But there's no real animal fighting in this. Like, the dogs are behaving like dumb dogs do, but it's not as though any of the animals are trying to fuck each other over. It never becomes sort of like Lord of the Flies or anything like that. You mentioned the bird helping them out before the broken wing thing even happens. Even the sea monster, which is incredible. Like, when that thing first popped out of the water, I went, oh shit. Yeah. Like, that was my first OMG moment of this. But even the sea monster helps the cat survive at one point, intentional or not. But it seems like all the animals are kind of collaborating, whether they know it or not, to get through this apocalyptic event.
And they refer to that as the whale, by the way. So like, they think of that as the whale. And I agree, because like, the whale saves him earlier. So there's a lot of interspecies rescuing happening here in a way that you're like, that doesn't feel like it would necessarily happen. They're all so different. They come from different, environments, literally, of how would you even think to save this cat? Because you don't know what saves it, right? You don't know what its environment is. You're a whale. This is a cat. You have fundamentally different environments. So I thought that was really interesting, but I think it spoke to the relationships that were being built and where you were going to invest in these particular characters. And I agree, the birds felt like a mob a little bit, and there's no violence, but there's implied violence, right? There's an implied threat there, I should say, of like, they're ready to, you know, get rid of this cat potentially because they don't understand what threat it poses and things like that. But one of the other things I love there is like the protectiveness of multiple creatures. Like, the dog wants to protect the cat. Again, something that you wouldn't expect from your average dog, right? The dog wants to protect the cat. The cat begrudgingly wants to look out for the dog a little bit and look out for the other creatures a little bit. They save the lemur, but the cat is really scared to save the lemur, you can tell. And the lemur doesn't want to leave their things. You know, the cat just wants to survive. And the lemur is preoccupied by their stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, oh, I can't take all my stuff. You know, I want to take my stuff.
I love that interaction with the capybara where he's just kind of rushing him along of like, look, your shit's in here. We're going. Like, we're out of here.
We're going. Yeah. That's the most you could. That's it. This is your go bag. Okay. This is the go bag and you've got everything in there. Let's move. You know, it's like, yeah, it's such an interesting and compelling dynamic. And then, you get into this phase of they've all sort of settled into a little bit of a routine on this boat of helping each other. And the secretary bird is steering, you know, and again, I feel like she's like, y'all just let me handle this, you know. And they also see the other dogs at one point. They encounter the other dogs that have been under threat, and they continue to complicate matters because why not? Yeah. And, but I also, then you get to this point where the rudder breaks. And so you lose your ability to control where you're going and where you're going to end up. And I thought that was a really interesting and challenging shift in the story as well.
I was trying to remember, was it letting the dogs, the other dogs, onto the boat that finally got the bird to be like, fuck this? And it's like, I'm not steering. You guys want, like, I know what I'm doing, but if you guys want to overrule me, then here, and just lets the capybara steer the rest of the time.
Yeah. So it was like, well, they all bullied the bird is what right. It was like, they didn't like force him out, but they were like, no, do this. You know, it's like a bunch of kids yelling at mom, mm-hmm. like, wow, it's McDonald's. I want to go pull over, you know? Right.
And it's she's a great like, impression of a child.
McDonald's. I really, you know, that's what they want, right? They want McDonald's. Okay. Mm-hmm. You can tell I don't have kids anyway. But they, you know, whatever, they're bullying mom to pull over. And she's finally like, okay, fine. You're going to see what happens. And sure enough, mom was right. And yeah. You fucked it up. And so you fucked it up for everybody. Right. And so, and you just like also feel that judgment too from
it's just that like quick turn of the cat has finally brought its walls down and trust these other animals implicitly. It's jumping in and hunting all these fish to feed its new friends. Like, we finally hit this happy point. And then the other dogs show up and it's like, well, we don't want to leave them behind. We love dogs, but they just, this entire dynamic that's been built, it throws it all into chaos from then on out.
It does. But I think it's also like, they come into this like uneasy peace with each other. I think it's like, it's not perfect and we're still scared and we can't really control our destiny necessarily anymore, but we sort of accept one another and we begrudgingly, you know, have let things happen the way that they are, but it's really, we're going to stick together on the whole. I think that's what comes through. And I think the thing that was so stressful for me during all of that though, is like the cat keeps falling over bird and like stressing us all out. And you're like, can you please stop almost dying? I would love if you would not. But this leads to this really important moment of, it's not the perfect alliance, right? None of this is perfect, but it's safety. And it's also just somebody having your back, right? Like a number of creatures having your back and protecting you in some way and just kind of having that buddy system, right? Versus if you don't have that buddy system, you're alone. And so when the secretary bird flies away and the cat is like terrified at that, and it's like, where is she going? Is she okay? What's happening? And follows her. I think that's such an interesting and terrifying choice for this cat that has finally gotten to a point where they think they're okay. They think that they're kind of safe, but knows what the secretary bird has done for them and protected them and feels this real loyalty, it seems like, and wants to go follow them and make sure they're okay. And that leads to just this incredible scene between them, you know?
Yeah, that sequence, I wanted to touch on that of, have you come to accept our Lord and Savior bird, Jesus? Is that what happened on the island? I was a little confused.
I don't know for sure what you're supposed to think of that. I think you're supposed to decide what you think of that. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's another one of those. And I think that the bird had done what it could, and it's kind of magical that the bird can now fly again, right? Yeah. And I don't know that it actually can, you know, is it actually dying? Is that actually what's happening? And it's going to this mountain, like kind of, again, to your point, to sacrifice itself. And it definitely reads as a sacrifice to protect them and make sure they're safe. And at least to me, that's how it read. And the cat, I think, sees that for what it is and is like, but is also devastated. Like I think that's kind of their first real friend, you know, because the bird saved them the first time. And so they're like, this, you're the one looking out for me. You're the one saving me. Like, don't leave me. And it's actually, you know, saving them again, I think, is the implication there.
Yeah. There's no, again, no right or wrong answer on this. I think I was, you know, browsing Reddit and looking at the different theories and whatnot. I liked this one that someone came up with where they said that, you know, whatever this magical island area is that they're going to, maybe it's something where when you get there, it can sort of like grant a wish. So the bird, you know, wanted to fly again and then sort of goes back up and is able to do its own thing. In that case, I don't know why he wouldn't come back down and hang out with them though afterward. But yeah, but the cat was the one who like wished for the flood to end. I think more likely it's sort of, I interpret it how you do, of the bird, who whatever animal got there was the one that was able to stop this flood in as a sacrifice. And somebody also pointed out that at the beginning of the film, apparently there's like a rowboat or something in a tree. So it's implying that this flood has happened before.
Right.
So I think that that's interesting of like, you can read so much into what the, like, how this all works. Like, what are the rules of the universe? But it's intentionally strange.
I think the implication is that the water levels rise and fall. And almost unpredictably, because a number of things happen to imply that the boat in the tree, like you said, it coming back down, like you said, and the cat does, like, you know, they float on this little glass thing and they're trying to get back to their friends and to the boat, but then the water level is dropping suddenly, rapidly, really. And that part seems, maybe how quickly it's happening feels unexpected. And maybe that's why it feels like this is a sacrifice and that it saved them, so to speak. But, you know, as the water levels lower, it like it happens in real life, reveals a bunch of other things, right? It reveals where, you know, a whale, for example, is, you know, beached essentially, or in this case, like forested, right? They're in the middle of this forest and they have been basically stranded. And what I think is the really resonant takeaway for me for that is that they're all like, she's immediately concerned, or they're immediately concerned with the whale of like, oh no, you know, it didn't get back to the water. It's not safe. It's not okay in its environment. And there's almost this innate awareness. And you see that again earlier with when they saved the cat, of like, what does this creature need? I don't live in its same environment, but I know it's not where it's supposed to be. And how do I help it? How do I save it? And I think that's just it. And then you see this just incredible effort to save each other with the rope and the dogs and the tree and the lemur. And like, it's this, I don't know. It's just this community coming together at this point to help and save each other. And I think that's where a lot of the allegorical aspects of this came into play for me, of like, this very much feels like it could be a commentary on societies and how different they are, and different communities, both ethnic and from various countries, of this trepidation and fear of the other that you don't know or you're not aware of. But that when forced to come together and find a way to work together, you can bond and really care about each other and be there for each other and save each other, even if it feels like a counterintuitive alliance. And like, I feel like you see that come together, these very different communities coming together to save each other.
Yeah, the last 15 minutes are pretty intense, like emotionally and action-wise. Mm-hmm. And I think with the whale in that last scene, I think what we're seeing is, for a movie with no dialogue, the main character has a story arc. We've been talking about it. And we talked about how independent that creature is at the start, but then gradually sort of becomes more open to this sort of team dynamic that you were just talking about. But then,
and like dependent on it almost, like, yeah, very invested in it. And I think that's, yeah, I think that's their growth. Yeah.
Yeah. And the fact, like you said, they don't know what they're supposed to be doing to save the whale, but the fact that the cat just kind of comforts it in its dying moments, like, that is something it wouldn't have done earlier in the film, I think.
Would have ran away.
Yeah. And to your point about sort of the commentary on society, it's like, yeah, maybe we should just be more not like blind trust people, but be more just implicitly like believe that people can be good. You know, you're still going to get assholes in the mix, just like the four dogs in this. You're going to get the occasional selfish, moronic assholes. But yeah, for the most part, I think that people will look out for each other. So I hear you.
Yeah, I'm in this phase because, you know, the world and life of vacillating. My friends and I joked about this the other day between like, I love people and people are the worst. I hate everything and also have ongoing hope for humanity, right? And I feel like this film, at least for me, just, was a way of like actually holding on to that hope of, you can be so wildly different. You can be a whale or a cat. You couldn't almost get to other ends of the spectrum, right? In Mother Nature, and care for each other and support each other and comfort each other in those times that are hard. And, you know, in the case of the whale, save the cat. And I think it's just to look beyond the end of your own nose and go, who around me is at risk or need something and is human and also challenged in a number of ways, and how can I support them? And I think this is part of that story of like, we can be really different and be here for each other. And I think it's important to note that they come together, they see each other in their puddle. They are not afraid of each other anymore. They are affectionate and caring and invested in each other at this point. And they have become their own community, their own family. And they're also different. You wouldn't expect that, but it can work. It can be successful and be a real community. And I think you get that from this. And then with the post-credit scene, you really get the hope of this is all cyclical. This can all change. And this whale is here and is okay, you know? And so I think it was a very hopeful film at the end. It was hard kind of to get there at various points, but I think it was supposed to be hopeful.
Yeah, they sort of tease at the end there of like, is it going to happen again? Because they have the deer running again, and you're just like, shit, is this just going to like be instantly, we're going to go right back into this shit? And these poor animals, but that's why I think they have that shot of them looking at the puddle of like, now the cat is not alone anymore. And it's, you know, if this happens again, we will weather the storm together.
Right. We'll weather the storm together. We'll figure out what to do. We're going to take care of each other. Mm-hmm. And they do. And then, you know, and you see the whale is okay. And I think that's just such an iconic moment at the end of this film of like, when you think something is the end, it's maybe not the end, you know? Hold
Time's
on a little
flat
longer.
Circle, baby.
Right.
Time's a flat circle. True Detective.
It's not the end necessarily. And you can, if you hang on, there's, you know, maybe better things ahead. And that will look different for different people. And that's also okay. And you can still care about each other and still take care of each other. So all that to say, like, I think the story is really thought-provoking and different and unique. But beyond that, the animation is really beautiful, like I said. But we have to like talk about the way that it is shot, for lack of a better word. Like it feels like several long shots. There are several moments that feel like it's almost a single shot, right? Like when we think about like the 1917s of the world that did these single shot takes that are just so long and they go on forever. There's so many of those in here, and it's not fully a single shot, but it emulates these really long shot takes and the way that it was animated. And I think that's very unique, I think, to film in general, but even in animation, I feel like it's not even noticeable in an animation in some cases. And in this, I was like, wow. This feels like a really long sequential shot. And
the ones, when they're in all the action in the boat, because obviously you have to sort of animate it at eye level for the animals. So you're just kind of in there with them. But yeah, all those interactions where you're watching them walk around and sort of engage with each other and who's doing what, and there's silly stuff happening. I think those really long interactions within the boat are really cool to watch.
In the environment, you know, as they're running through the environment or they're going across an ocean or whatever it is, like there's just these long shots of you're following and there's no breaks, you know? And so it's really interesting. But then also interesting is I think the sounds, you know, what you're hearing throughout, it feels so authentically like nature. It just feels like you're hearing nature, but you're not hearing maybe everything. And he was interviewed and asked about this. The sound designer is the one who did all the animal sounds and helped complement the music that actually, again, the director, writer, composer, all the things had written for the film. And he did like 7 hours worth of music and they only used like 50 minutes of it. And the sound designer was saying like, it was really trying to emulate Jacques Tati, who's a French filmmaker, actually started as a mime, was a filmmaker and actor. And his approach in film was sounds to create emotion. You are hearing the sounds that will give you a reaction, an emotional reaction, and not just every single sound. And so I think it feels like the things that you're hearing in nature are intentional. The things that you're hearing in this feel carefully selected. You know,
yeah. For a film, again, what it accomplishes with no dialogue, you're never bored during this. The sound, the music, everything works together to sort of keep it compelling for the 80 or 90 minute runtime. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're not just not bored, you're anxious. And it's crazy that something that has no dialogue can create such suspense, you know, and heightened emotion. So I think even if it was just that, it would be really a compelling film. It feels like everything on the screen is moving, not just one thing, right? Like the environment is moving, the characters are moving, but you're hearing only specific sounds and you're seeing only specific angles. And yeah, I just think it was really fascinating watch. I thought about this film after I saw this. I think I thought about it for like 2 weeks straight. I was like, because I saw it back when it came out. So I was like, this is just so thought-provoking and unique. And so
I know you thought about doing this for our episode with Neil where we were doing like best or hidden gems of 2024, and it was I think not streaming anywhere yet, so that's why we didn't do it then. So I knew you were a big fan, but what's like overall rating, where are you gonna put this?
I think it's like a 9 out of 10 for me. I just thought like was so interesting, and again, I just thought you could interpret it so many ways. I feel like I can get so many layers out of this if I want, right? I can just watch it as an environmental film and see what's physically happening. And that's interesting. I can think about it as an allegorical film of like what story and symbolism is here. And that's interesting. I can look at it as a technical achievement and go, wow, the animation here is interesting and the music here is interesting and the sounds here are interesting. And that's compelling. So I just think it has so many layers to it that I think it was just really profound in some ways. And again, if I'm thinking about a movie for weeks afterward, then I think it's a very worthy piece of art.
Yeah. I'm mostly in line, I think. It's one where I just appreciate what it does more than anything else. It's just so different. And to come from Latvia to be a $3 million budget created using free software, like we said, no dialogue. It's just for all the things it does different, that's what makes it special. I don't think it's going to be one that I'm going to watch constantly or anything like that. If I had kids, I would probably throw it on, you know, every couple of weeks or whatever for them. But I'm going to give it like an 8. I think it's really, really good. I highly recommend it. And yeah, it's just different. So just strap in and enjoy.
Yeah, definitely different for sure. Yeah, strap in and enjoy. I highly recommend. I think you said it's streaming now as well, so you can watch it here soon. Definitely go give it a watch when you can. And thank you for joining. And next week, we're going to be covering what we feel and have heard is going to be kind of controversial. Emilia Perez is on Netflix streaming. It's supposedly a bit genre-defying, like musical-esque a little bit, but a couple other layers to it. I highly recommend watching it so you can have this conversation with us, because neither of us have seen it yet. It is on my list, as we know, because it's an Oscar film, but there's a lot of rumblings about this one. So we're going to see how we feel about it. And we're going to try, at least I'm going to try to blot out the noise and just watch it and see what happens.
Yeah, I'm going to try to be objective in my first watch through. I mean, not objective, I guess subjective is my, but I'm going to try to not let other people's opinions sort of impact what I think the first time through, but I am hearing some of the stuff out there, and it's some of it's not good and other people fucking love it. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Again, I think I said this in the last one, the people I know who have seen it personally love it. And it's more the conversation around it that seems negative and for a number of reasons. And some of those things seem reasonable and some of them don't. So I'm interested to see where this one will take us. So come back for that one. That'll be our last Oscar one for the month. So strap in. But for now,
follow us on social, Instagram mostly. So give us a follow there. Likes, comments, all that good stuff. You can also watch video of the podcast on YouTube now or on Spotify video if you want to see our beautiful faces. And you can also email us anytime at wedrinkandwewatchthingspod@gmail.com. So if we mess anything up, if you have suggestions, give us some theme ideas. We got another month coming up. We got to brainstorm. So yeah.
And then also check us out on YouTube. I feel like YouTube's the new TikTok. I'm just saying that's what I'm manifesting because I'm spending a lot of time on it. So anyway. For now, though, go have a drink and watch a thing. Cheers.
Cheers.